Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2, and this is a very special edition because this is our first edition on our new site. Yes, we have moved the virtual kitchen table. We had to dust under it, you know? It was just getting messy. It's been 10 years. So we moved the virtual kitchen table, and you can go to bit.ly/metaromp, and there will be a link there that'll get you to the website. And actually, this show will not be posted until September 10th, but then you won't know that till you listen to it. So here we are. It's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
It's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And it's very definitely another beautiful day in my consciousness, too.
Yeah, and this is Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck, and I have a website at paulhasselbeck.com where you can see my weekly blog called The Absolute Word that is based on Unity's Sunday Absolute Word message, and also where you can see my calendar where I travel all around the country speaking and teaching. And when I'm not at this end of the virtual kitchen table in Overland Park, Kansas. And I'm here with my buddies, my friends, my Rev Doctors. Hi, guys. Introduce yourselves.
Hello there. This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton.
And this is R.D. Bill Holton. We are glad to be with you. And just so you know, Cher and I have co-founded an online spiritual ministry for those who are more spiritual than religious. And our ministry is called the Global Center for Spiritual Awakening.com.
Woohoo!
We have tons of resources there, and we invite people to go and check it out.
Absolutely. So, here we go. You ready to romp?
We are so ready to romp, and we're excited with this new era of our show as we move into the world of podcasts.
And so our show is
to bring our listeners with us.
Absolutely, and new ones we hope will find us, and yes. Our show is pretty much timed to a morning or afternoon commute of around 26 minutes. And so our first segment will be looking at spiritual laws as found in the published Unity writings. And the second segment, we are romping with Bill's newish book, Reverend Bill Unplugged and Unedited, where Cher left Bill unsupervised, right, Cher?
Right, in my defense.
Yeah, in your defense, right? Well, and generosity, too. You're very generous, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I knew he needed that outlet to not have his words edited.
Yes, yes. So a spiritual law describes how mind works and uses or depends on spiritual principle in some way. A spiritual principle is like a constant or a fact, a universal constant or universal fact, and both principle and laws are always active. So today we're beginning with the law of conservation of vital force, the law of conservation of vital force. And I should say there are laws and rules tell us how to use the laws. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Okay, Cher, take her away.
And I want to say before I jump in with this, that in Unity principles and practices and classes, we hear a lot about laws and principles, but I'm shocked that nobody has ever done this before, what Paul has done. He has actually gone through all the writings of Charles and Myrtle Fillmore and pulled out the references to all the laws and practices. So, Paul, I think this is going to be just such an invaluable resource for people as you get that put into a book.
And that is the goal, because we need to have these universal principles and laws defined, mm-hmm. and so we can use them consciously.
Mm-hmm. And it's important for Unitics all over the world to know the basic principles and foundational ideology that the Unity movement is founded upon.
Absolutely. In a cohesive way.
Right. Yes. And of course, with our podcasts around them, wow, what a great resource to have a narrated discussion around what Charles has written, because sometimes Charles is very hard to understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
So jumping in today, we're coming from Atom Smashing Power of Mind by Charles Fillmore. And somewhere around the 158 page mark, depending on what version you're looking at. And this is where he talks about it. And here's what he says. When the body is devitalized by excessive labor, dissipation, or any loss of vital force, its aura shrinks away and a consciousness akin to that of being unclothed is evident.
So does the aura shrink? Yes, I guess it does. It expands, sure. Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, size of that aura.
Anywhere from 6 inches beyond the body to sometimes even 3, 3.5, 4 feet.
So do we want to define aura since we have stopped?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Why don't you define aura? Yeah.
Yeah, just in case people aren't aware, because that's a word that we throw around. If you use it a lot, you assume everybody understands it, and yep. It's a word not everybody uses. And aura is actually, I'll use an actual definition. It's an emanation that surrounds the body of a living creature, very often viewed by mystics, spiritualists, and some practitioners of complementary medicine as the essence of the individual, and allegedly discernible by people of special sensibilities. And actually the aura comes in many different colors, which as these people see the aura, it reflects something about that person's level of energy and health and that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, because people can read somebody's aura, right?
Yes,
oh,
yeah. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, as a matter of fact, a lot of clairvoyance and mystics can read auras, and the aura doesn't just surround the head as people see in many of the fundamental depictions of saints, that kind of thing. The aura we're talking about is an orb that surrounds the whole body.
An orb, O-R-B, yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point.
And it does vary depending on the level of energy within you. It expands that aura. So
very
it can
cool.
be very big, or it can be just really, really little.
And it goes from about 6 inches beyond the body to even up 3.5, 4 feet.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so go ahead, Cher.
So now that we know what an aura is, now he jumps into dreams and he talks a little bit about dreaming. To dream of being naked or partly clothed is a warning by spirit that the reserve vital force has been dissipated and the natural clothing of the body removed. Continuous disregard of the law of conservation of vital force is followed by various diseases and finally death. During sleep, the system under natural law seeks to equalize the vital forces, and it does so if the intellectual concentration has not been too great. A dream of falling means that this force, which has been piled up in the head, is falling down into the lower channels of the body and is restoring equilibrium at the expense of harmonious reaction. When the mind is adjusted to the divine law, all the vital forces flow harmoniously and the aura glows about the body as a beautiful white light, protecting it from all discord from without and purifying it continually from within.
Whoa.
Whoa, that's quite a package.
Well, and that's a nice piece of dream interpretation.
It is, you know? It is.
And Fillmore got a lot of his stuff from dream state because it's thought to be emanated from the subconscious mind. I just didn't think of the aura being a white light. I've always heard of it having colors.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, the aura has many colors. It is a multicolored. The coat that is written in the Bible about Jacob having a coat of many colors, Joseph having a coat of many colors, is actually
Jacob made it.
Yeah, it's actually a misnomer because in the original Hebrew, the coat that they're talking about it was either a long sleeved coat or a long sleeved tunic. Made of several different fabrics, so there's nothing at all about really a multicolored coat, if you will. Metaphysically, the multicolored coat is probably talking about your chakras, which are multicolored, of course. But the aura we're talking about here, auras can range anywhere from silver to red to gold to blue. The grayish colors, the darker colors, are generally depicted by clairvoyance to identify certain areas in the body that are diseased. And also it could relate to depression. A lot of clairvoyants, when they see someone, the aura sort of dictates to them where to look in the body of the individual to find whatever the malady is.
Yeah.
Now the white light that Charles talked about, there is some credence to that. However, the white light in psychology, psychologists have a term for this protective shield, if you will, this protective orb around our bodies. And in psychological terms, it's called a psychological shielding. And what's interesting is a lot of people who say that I'll put white light around myself or someone else to protect them. So there's some science behind that.
Oh, that is really cool. And I'll admit to sensing, I'm not sure it's called like literally seeing darkness or grayness around a person. And I clued in on something that, and normally what I see is something around somebody's head. And often when I am with these people and I see it, I do get from their own sharing that they're in depression or sad or grief or something going on. Yeah.
And you know, the energy that people send out is very different. You can feel that depressed energy when you're with somebody who's going through that.
Absolutely.
It's an awareness. And I think it's interesting you mentioned that you don't necessarily see it, you sense it, but you're aware. And it's good for people to know that there's no one, quote, right way to see auras or to visualize or any of these, or meditate any of these.
Yeah, and so we have more than five senses. I think this is an additional one. I don't know what it's named, right? But we definitely have it. So if we look about the law of conservation of vital force, it seems to me to be a choice. So I would put it in a rule category that we have a choice whether we conserve our vital forces or not. And so rules usually tell us how to use a law, and I'm not really clear on what law this might be. So
now, one sentence he has here kind of gives us a clue, I think. He says, during sleep, the system under natural law seeks to equalize the vital forces.
So natural law, that's cool, because so natural law in Fillmore usually refers to the laws of physics and stuff. And so this would be a natural law of our, it would be a law of our physical bodies. And we certainly know restoration is important. And this is what this paragraph is all about. And to remind our listeners, the three of us are getting to the point that natural law, kind of like that, natural law for the physical realm, including our physical bodies, and the constants and or principles that's connected with those laws, go into the same bucket as spiritual law and spiritual principle.
Yeah.
If we had to summarize this rule or best practice, it is to be aware of the power and the need for rest.
Yes.
That we can't just keep pushing, that our body will respond in a negative way. I always like to use the analogy of your car with gas. You know, when the car, if you don't take care of that car and fill it, when it runs out of gas, it doesn't ask you, is this a good time to run out of gas? It just stops.
Yeah, it just stops, right?
The body will do the same.
And Fillmore talks about warning by spirit, which could be interpreted as outside and separate. And we would say our higher self is giving us a clue. Okay, and that's a clue too.
It is a clue. When you hear the bell ring, you know that there is something going on.
Right.
A chime. And this is where we want to make the little shift from talking about the law, which we pretty much summed up as take care of yourself. You know, really, it's so important to give yourself that opportunity to rest, and because your body is constantly giving you clues to tell you that.
Yep.
So I think that pretty much sums up a really good information and resource from Charles.
Yes, absolutely.
Put into practice. And as we make our shift, we want to move to Bill's book, which is Reverend Bill Unplugged and Unedited. And as we move to his material, we just got through doing a spiritual cafe, which for our listeners, this is an opportunity where we invite people into our home that are here in our area, and we talk about different spiritual concepts, and we just have our own little round table, kitchen table, if you will, discussion and in-depth resource about it. And our folks had requested us to talk about Adam and Eve. And it started out as just what does that story mean? Where did it come from? And it ended up into two sessions because we couldn't get done with the discussion. People wanted more. And we talked about the origins of the story of Adam and Eve and all the different places historically where that story came from, and then the meta-spiritual interpretation of the Genesis version of it. What does that mean when it's all within us? And then the science. What does science say about where we really came from? It kind of took that whole
thing. Very cool.
So we put that into what we call a white light paper.
White light paper? What?
Yeah. And that's our term. In corporate America, people may be familiar with white papers, which are where people, some are just briefing papers, others are very detailed reports that summarize some key concept that executives are looking for. And it's kind of like an executive overview of a topic.
Cool.
And they're called white papers. So we thought, since we're going to be doing overviews and in-depth discussions of spiritual topics, we would call them white light papers, which ties in very nicely with what we just talked about with white light.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So they can go to bit.ly and get to your website. And
there'll be a link there. There'll be a link there for it. And we're offering it. It's a 13-page white light paper on the whole story of Adam and Eve and where we came from. And I just want to put that little plug in for it. And
all right,
go and visit and take a peek at it, because it'll give you some great information.
Absolutely. So, I'm ready to romp with Bill's book, Reverend Bill Unplugged and Unedited, yes, and Unsupervised.
Unsupervised, yes. And what I'm doing is just, I'm pulling up stuff, and I get, since I left him unsupervised, I get to pick what we talk about.
Right.
And if you don't mind, I'd like to interject quickly before we get started on this. I was just thinking about our discussion of the vital force that Charles Fillmore's talking about, and he had mentioned about the nakedness, dreaming of being naked and not having clothing. And I'm wondering, because he's talking about vital force here, if that could metaspiritually be interpreted as our loss of, as he says, the reserve vital force has been dissipated. I wonder that if we when we incarnate, that our body then, our spiritual body, is surrounded by this physical denseness of our quantum form. And I wonder if that had something to do with it, with that energy being dissipated, if you will. I'm going to work on that a little bit. I just want to give a heads up to our listeners.
Yeah, there's a, you got tickled, didn't you?
I did. Very definitely.
The ant.
Okay, Cher. We're in Bill's book, and Cher tells us the topic and the page number. Those of you who have the book.
And I wanted to do just a little piece related to spiritual growth. We talked about spiritual growth in our last show, which started on page 170 in Bill's book, for those who are following along. But we didn't finish it, and there was one little piece I wanted to talk about because I thought it was so important. So it's on page 172.
Okay.
And it starts with the little quote that's in the middle of the, or kind of the top part of the page. It says, "Make your spiritual growth not just a passing moment, but composed of permanent now moments of lifetime devotion."
Yes. Yes. And look at there. You use devotion.
I use the D word. Yep.
Yeah. Which a lot of people would say lifetime discipline, right?
Discipline, yep.
Oh, yep. Yeah,
so it's a lifetime of devotion. We're devoted to knowing our higher self and being our higher self and living from our higher self. Yes.
Yeah. And I just like the idea that it's not something we do in addition to everything else we do.
Right.
That it is who we are, and we can make it part of our life experience, that our spiritual practice is our living.
Yes.
And it's not separate.
Exactly. That is really good. Yeah.
Yeah. So then he says, "No one should swallow whole the spiritual perspectives of another without giving thought to what is shared." I love that sentence, because no matter how much you admire a person or believe in what they believe in, you still want to always hear it and then take it within and evaluate it yourself.
So this comes under that prove the truth you know.
Yes.
Or prove the spiritual teaching you know. Don't just take it on somebody else's word.
And I love something you said in one of our classes when we were sitting in one of your metaphysical classes, and I still remember this, is so many people say, take what works for you and leave the rest.
Yes.
And that is not the accurate interpretation. So would you share what you say about that?
Because I think so this is found somewhere in within the Unity writings. It is really take what works or what resonates with you, and then don't throw the other out, but explore it and go more deeply into it, because something new often feels uncomfortable and not right. And so it's important for us to dive into those things that don't seem right. And that's that exploratory piece.
And I think that's a huge difference from just, oh, if it feels good, I'm going to hang on to it and I'm going to ignore everything else.
Right.
Which is how people interpret it.
Well, because otherwise you're throwing the quote unquote baby out with the bathwater.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So go ahead, Cher.
Okay, so it says, we must allow the sharing of spiritual and religious perspectives to clear a path and open a dialogue that leads to mutual growth, transformation, and expansion.
Mutual growth, very important. It's not just about me. It's about everyone, right?
And then make the most of your spiritual growth and the least of your material whims.
Oh, that should have been highlighted.
There's Bill playing with words again.
That is really, really, that is really a keeper.
That's a tweet.
That's a tweet. Yep.
Seed sown from our higher consciousness and nourished through study, meditation, prayer, service to others, and a regular spiritual practice can bring us a bumper crop of mind-boggling awarenesses.
Yeah. And you know what? This would be a good place to mention. So regular spiritual practice, we each kind of know what that means, and it's vague, right? What happens in vagueness stays in vagueness. and Bill and Cher have a resource on their main site that is how many 400 spiritual practices or something like that.
It's 400 and counting. Yeah. We're adding to it
constantly
all the time.
Add to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to find those, go to our link, bit.ly/MetaRomp, and Cher will have a link there to their website, or maybe you can put a link directly to those. I don't know.
And you're just, you're invited to just take advantage of everything we have there, because we kind of go wild with sharing resources.
Well, and that's important. And people need to be clear on their specific spiritual practices. And so now,
and not every practice works for everybody. That's also very important. That's why there's a need for such a variety.
Right. And you got to give it a chance.
Right. Exactly.
Don't just do it once and say it doesn't work for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think you should do it three times.
Something
once to test it out, the second time to decide whether or not you like it, and the third time to actually experience it.
That's great. Yes, actually experience it. So let's pivot now to the Absolute Word, which is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. So we're grateful that Unity continues to give us permission. This is from Sunday, September 2nd, 2018. And the word is faith. I use faith to make every choice today. Faith is my ability to believe. My power of faith is always in play. Every choice I make is based on what I believe. My moment-by-moment choices create my life experience. My life reflects what I believe. I invest time today to observe the life I am living. I believe in and claim abundance where there seems to be lack. I faithfully can't claim a person's divine identity rather than judging their appearance. The great news is that I can change my focus whenever I choose. I am not a victim of the events and challenges in my life. I use my power of faith to see the truth beyond appearances. No matter what seems to be, I am always divine. In the midst of conflict, I believe in and claim peace. I use faith to make every choice today. Yeah, I make
powerful.
Right? That divine idea, power, or principle of faith, whatever you call it, is so important. And as all the 12 powers are important, and then the other principles we're identifying, and I'm sure we're going to circle back to it sometime. And so any comments on that, Bill and Cher?
Just that it's a very powerful affirmation. I use faith to make every choice today.
Okay, friends. So that wraps up our first show in our new location as we have moved the virtual kitchen table. And it's been our pleasure to be with you. And we want to thank you for all your support and for listening. And remember, you can go to bit.ly/MetaRomp to leave comments or questions. And we'll be happy to field those. And I thank Cher for doing that. So Bill and Cher, thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you, everybody. Goodbye. Make it a fabulous day.
And we surround all of you with a white light of protection.
Yeah, and make it another beautiful day in your consciousness.
Yes.